Hi, everyone. This is Raise the Vibe, where you'll find interviews with our local healers, shamans, psychics, and people who are making a difference here on Vashon in concern for our health and well-being. I'm your host, Liz Peterson. Welcome to today's show. Today, I have Anya Weil in the studio with me. Anya is one of our local Kundalini yoga teachers, and she's going to be discussing Kundalini yoga and how it can be a benefit to our lives. Anya, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So glad to have you here.
So happy to be here. Yeah.
So, Anya, I don't have your bio, so why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself so Vashon gets to know who you are.
I am a Kundalini yoga teacher, and right now I'm also training to become a yoga therapist. So for me, it's kind of like a graduation, kind of almost like natural process of like being a yoga teacher, helping catering your practice and teachings towards healthy people most of the time, like plus minus, you know, we all have our kind of things that, yes. Also graduating to go into like more like a deeper practice on helping people to recover and stay well. So, and that's very exciting for me. It's where I'm kind of in the process right now, but how I came to Kundalini yoga, I've been practicing since my young 20s, and it changed my life dramatically within like few months, let's say, like of just starting yoga and living my life like, you know, most of young 20 years old people go, like a party and this and that, you know, just kind of like full life. And
yes,
it's not like I cut everything off, but I just like certain things start just going away naturally. And I didn't really recognize it was yoga right away. I just loved how I felt when I was doing that. And beginning why I wanted to do that is because it was very powerful exercises that made me feel like, oh, I'm going to be like, you know, in good shape and, you know, and just look good. And It's how it kind of started. But then meditation came in and you all of a sudden you just like feel differently, experience things that kind of you couldn't tap in like this life that I was leading. And then slowly, step by step, without making any commitments to change, the change just came. And it was so natural, like in progression, like altering my diet, altering like the way I just see life and choices I make. And then reflecting on that, I realized, oh my gosh, like it helped me so much and it can help so many people. And this was my intent to start becoming yoga teacher, because like, oh my gosh, I really want to share it with people.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, glad you decided to do that. I love your classes.
Yeah. That was, so it was in the journey since then. So I right away, my husband helped me to find like a class, a teacher training, not far from where we lived, and the transformation started because the level one, which I took 20 years ago, and it was huge transformation. I realized like I wasn't doing a lot of things right when I was doing by myself through the books. You know, like, it was like kind of good self-correction, like while going through the training, realizing that and then learning this amazing science. And I continue learning that and being inspired every day. And not only through like, you know, my personal transformation, but now being able to see how it helps other people in so many different ways.
That's beautiful, Anya. And I can't even believe you said 20 years ago, because you don't look like new. Everybody, she looks about 30.
Thank you.
Beautiful, sunshine, tan. And you just got back from an adventure. I got an email from you saying that you had just returned back to the island.
Yes, that's right. So I'm a mom. I have two kids. And I'm also Russian. And since we're living abroad for like many years, and then we moved to the island, and island life is so cozy and comfortable, you just don't want to leave it. And it felt like my kids were kind of getting more distant from like my culture, and the language was kind of hard to keep up. We don't really have a large Russian community. So my husband and I, we kind of thought about it and talked about it, and we thought this will be good for kids to have 1 year in Russia, to go in Russian school, connect with my family on more like a deeper level versus like our summer trips when we just kind of guests and tourists. And so that's what we did. We packed our house and rented it out, and all of us went back to my hometown where my husband and I met 20 plus years ago and got married in 22 or something like that. And then so we moved in our small apartment, which back then when I was young, it didn't feel small. It was great. It was right in the center of city, everything, right. You know, but from Vashon house with two dogs and a cat, two kids, it was quite interesting to kind of like, we wanted sort of minimalize. And it was also intent to sort of shake things a little bit and like reevaluate what's important, what is not. But it's quite an adventure. So yeah.
Oh, it sounds like it. It sounds like a great experience, like, for your family.
It was really great experience, and I really appreciate that my family actually decided to do that. Like, I remember bringing it up first, like as an idea. And like looking at their faces, thinking, oh my gosh, what they're gonna think, like, crazy mom. But you know, especially like my daughter, she was very much on board. I was like, yeah, let's do that, let's go.
Great. And she had done education abroad before, right?
She did 1 year on a boarding school, and then Elsa, she was born, both of my kids were born abroad, and Sophia was born in Central Asia in Uzbekistan. And then growing up, up to the time when we came to Ashan in Southeast Asia, so she went to international schools before, and she experienced that life. It kind of was the life, how she was kind of came to. So being in like a smaller community and in one place, and was kind of foreign to her. Mm-hmm. While for my son, when he moved to Vashon, he was only 9 months old, and that's all he knew. Uh-huh. So for him, was like, oh my gosh. But, you know, he found his groove.
Two very different experiences.
Yeah. But that's what it is. Life is like, you know, just try different experience and figure out what's, you know, what works, what you can take from that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Cool. Anya, can you tell us what took you to Kundalini yoga from the beginning? I know you mentioned it a little bit, but is there a life occurrence or something like that that kind of led you to Kundalini yoga?
There is no like a real life occurrence. Sometimes like people looking for like healing techniques or practices. Mm-hmm. It just happened to be like my husband, now husband, back then boyfriend, he was a Peace Corps volunteer. So he was from the United States, came to Crimea, and we met and we started dating. And he already was practicing yoga on his own, that Kundalini yoga.
Oh, cool.
And so he gave me books on Kundalini yoga. And we, I think, like did a couple practices, and it was quite different and very special how it felt that way. I also was crazy in love, and I'm still in. Uh-huh. It was also a combination of like, whoa, everything is so new and so awesome. Like, I love it all. And then so I started doing my own practice through the books. I was also learning English at the time. So all the books were in English. And so it was quite interesting, like, experience of both. Like, I was learning everything, you know. And it's what I said, that was just how I felt. What it led to, what kind of experiences within my own body that helped me to sort of stay on that path.
Great.
And yeah.
I have found also, you said something earlier about, you know, the changes just started happening. And that was kind of my experience too with yoga, because whenever I would go to yoga, it was one of those practices where when I was done, I wanted to eat healthy.
Yeah.
I wanted to do healthier things. And that was the only quote unquote exercise that I found that actually did that. So I think it really helps us to kind of dive deeper into who we are. And then it becomes more than just practice, more than just exercise. It really taps into spirituality, who you are, you know, being present with the planet.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So that's what yoga is aimed to. Yeah. You can see it, and it works on so many levels. You start with the physical exercise, but they call it, it's almost like a door, because through the door, physical body, that's what we have. We have our muscles, we have our glands, we have our, like, you know, pathways for, you know, for like energy and the circulation. Through stimulating that with like particular yogic poses or movements, mudras, position of hands, or even eye position, how we do that, we get experiences, true experiences that are not just like philosophy or ideas that somebody tells you this and that. This is, you can tap into that, what we call, like, what yoga is, the union, this kind of connection of your real true self, who you are. And when you experience that, as soon as you experience it, you start altering your life without even like thinking about it, without making commitment, without like creating like New Year's resolutions. It just will start correcting itself, because as you kind of experience that place to be at home, when you know what's possible, when you know that's possible, everything, every part of you, every cell of your body will just go to where that place where you can feel at home as much as you can.
That is great. Thank you. That's a wonderful description. And for those people who don't know what Kundalini yoga is, I remember I was having a friend over to the island and we wanted to do a full day experience of hiking and an activity together. And I said, oh, you know, yoga is this day. Why don't you come? And then afterwards, she goes, that wasn't what I was expecting. So I don't think a lot of people know exactly what Kundalini yoga is. They think they hear yoga and they think it's going to be the asana, you know, practice and that sort of thing. Can you describe for the audience what Kundalini is and what does it look like?
Yeah, so Kundalini yoga is not asana-based yoga. Even though we do use postures and movement, and a lot of it, actually, it's very physical. How you know, you can design your practice as and tailor to where you are in the body, but it's a prana-based yoga. And the prana-based yoga, that means that you using that life force that carried by air through breath, and you through movement, kind of the pumping movement, sometimes stretching movement, applying pressure movement, redistribute this life force through all the organs and all the systems in your body. And that's kind of what it is. So it won't be just holding the posture, even though it can be. There is thousands and thousands of yoga sets, what we call kriyas, that catering to a particular, let's say, thing you want to work on. Like you can work on the liver, you can work on your kidneys, you can work on, you know, just general energy level of your body if you want to be just have more vitality, or you can work on reducing stress. And so that set, that particular kriya will be designed with certain exercises. Some exercises can be static, some can be movement. It's very, very kind of, you never get bored with it, because it's just always something new. And another idea is like you do need like a range of movement, range of experiences to fully understand what it means to be human in this body and this very amazing systems that we have. So it, and then it always integrates meditation and just lots of sound work through mantra, through the breath, and the sound happens quite a lot. And yeah, so that's kind of prana-based yoga, let's say.
And whenever I go into one of your classes or do one of them online, you always set an intention. Can you talk about that?
I believe that intention in general in life is like a very important thing. It's kind of like, where do we want to go? What are we going to do? Like, why are we doing that? And as soon as we set an intention, I think everything kind of lines up, your physical body, surrounding your environment, things like that, and I will just be working towards that goal as soon as it's set up consciously. Whatever we do, we want to start with intentions, like why I'm doing that. Like today, let's say I had a yoga class and there were two very difficult exercises, and I asked them, just remember your intention. So you came here, just remember that intention. You came here because you want to be healthier, you want to feel good, you want to be, you know, in an uplifted mood, you want your glandular system work smoothly. So let's just remember that, and that will carry us through all the difficulties, because that's what intention does.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you also focus on usually a specific area of the body. Can you talk about that a little bit too?
Yeah, because that's how we can. Well, the thing is that yoga set, if it's balanced yoga set, it will work on a lot of things at the same time. But there will be some point that you really want to, let's say we're doing detox, right, class, and it will be like moving a lot of like lympha. It will help like, you know, stimulate the liver. It will just do those things specifically more for cater to that particular set. And then we'll do meditation that will help us to clear our thoughts and like subconscious and things like that. So it's kind of overall kind of a theme of the practice that would be.
Cool. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the meditation and how you use that in practice and what that looks like?
Meditations also, they can be of different techniques. Like major two, let's say, directions. It's mm-hmm. like one is meditation like a prayer, and then meditation as a like reading the what's happening and kind of aware, being aware. And what I love about Kundalini Yoga meditation, they include both. So very often meditation will use, let's say, hand position or even hand movement, because with that we stimulate particular pranic pathways that we want to include in that particular meditation, the practice that, let's say, cater to, let's say, reducing stress or cater to releasing anger or cater to whatever the work is we're doing. So that would be working on those pathways to help, let's say, work on the spleen at the same time while we're doing meditation, because we're including and working on our meridians. Then it will have very often breath. Sometimes breath is just natural, but would be specific breath or that also brings that awareness. The more we're focusing on the breath, the more our mind goes into that more like a calmer place. Mm-hmm. And very often we use sound that we're just learning in our modern science how that works in the body, that, oh, it creates certain chemicals that balance the heart, or, you know, but you ancient yogis did it through their sensory experiences, how they find out the different sounds, how they affect the body, because there is so many nerve ends on the roof of the mouth, and they're producing different sounds with different, you know, mantras, or just sounds, could be just sound like a humming or ah, or that how it influences and what it does to your brain, and how those higher glands in the brain will adjust the entire glandular system, and how all the system will start regulating themselves. So in meditation also can be in a different time frame, like from 3 minutes, which I loved too, you know, like mm-hmm. in Kundalini Yoga, you can choose like 3 minute meditation and it will give you the effect. You will get the experience. And again, that experience will drive the changes in your life, drive the changes in your lifestyle and like your thought pattern and things like that. Or they can be longer meditations. There are meditations that last for 2.5 hours. Then, of course, you can go much deeper. So there is no real limit how far you can go, but you will go and you will get an experience, and that experience will change, will allow you to change.
Nice. Oh, the yoga, the meditation is one of my favorite parts of class for sure. And could you tell us, what is the purpose of Kundalini Yoga?
So by the name Kundalini Yoga, people assuming is just to raise the Kundalini energy. And yes, it is. Just like a Hatha Yoga, it's also based on a purpose to raise the Kundalini energy. And then what we call it in yoga, it's like that creative force that's like that kind of allows us to be creative, to be expressive, to live fully as a humans, be in touch with our emotions, but also be conscious. But we also call Kundalini Yoga yoga of awareness. So it's not just only that experience that some people would describe. And if you like Google Kundalini Yoga, you will find all kinds of crazy things, which, I mean, for some people related, but not what I know and what my experience and people, it's pretty much raising your awareness. And it again goes through that experience. As soon as you experience your true self, you experience what's possible, you experience how it can be and what it means to feel like really good, then that start bringing awareness to your life, to all the aspects of your life, because you're constantly evaluating, is this the right thing for me or not? How does it feel? How does this relationship feel? How does this food feel? How is this, how this kind of interaction, of what this thought is feeling? Because that's what we want. We want to bring that awareness to the level where we will be able to catch our thought process before it turns into emotion, before it turns into action that then we kind of have to pay for. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's kind of a yoga of awareness. And we aiming to get to that much more subtle reality when we able to see what our thought patterns are and how they adjust our reality, and how we, through that place, we can change our reality and our perception of things.
That's beautiful. I love that. And that is one of the better, you know, qualities and benefits of doing this Kundalini yoga practice, is really finding your center and getting grounded and, yeah, you know, being able to respond in places instead of going into that reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is a beautiful process.
So it is like pretty much like you you do exercise, let's mm-hmm. say, right?
Yeah.
And then you feel what it does, how it, and then you have this time for exploration, your sensory exploration that we always allow in Kundalini Yoga and those like little lay downs. People are joking sometimes like, oh, we do, and then we'll just lay down and rest. We do. And that, but it's like, it's a multi-level why we're doing that. So mm-hmm. one of the things, because we allow to integrate the experience through feeling them and sensing them and giving attention to them. And another thing, we also are really working on balancing our parasympathetic and sympathetic system, because when the mode of like, let's do this exercise with this powerful breath, like whatever it is, like sit-ups or squats or something, but then we have a moment to lay down, and that's what it happens. This is this kind of a wave of like parasympathetic to sympathetic. That's what we want in life. We don't want to be constantly doing and not knowing how to relax. We want to equal amount of applying pressure and then releasing. And then if we see like pretty much all of our systems in the body works this way, and it needs this pattern to be healthy. And so in yoga setting class, we allow that to happen, and then you can carry on in the life. So you do, yeah. And then you
nice.
rest.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system and how it can affect our daily lives?
So that's kind of two parts what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and very often, or like lately, let's say in our society, people who allow rest and parasympathetic system to take over are not rewarded. What's rewarded mm-hmm. is constant being on, constant being stressed and do more and more, and it never ends. And it leads to the situation when we have a chronic stress, and then chronic stress will lead to some kind of physical problem like a disease or and like burnout and things mm-hmm. like that. So we want to have a balance. We want to be somewhere in the middle. It's not like we don't want stress in our life. This is part of being a human, being part of on the planet Earth. There's like a lot of gravity, a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. It's not going to go away, but we want to be able to have this time for restoration and allow ourselves. But it's because very often we are our own, those guards of like constantly on stress and pushing. So we want a nice balance, and just sleeping is not enough.
Especially since most of the time, if you're stressed out, you're stressed out in your sleep.
Very often your sleep is not a quality. Of course, sleep is incredibly important.
Yes.
And it's also one of the things that, you know, like we also do lots of kriyas and meditation that helps with the sleep and help to stimulate the glands and the system. But it's also pretty much bringing into balance parasympathetic, sympathetic. So we are in that somewhere in the middle. When we need to, you know, we have that capacity to step up and like use more energy being in like some stressful situation, but mm-hmm. we have that also capacity to let go and relax, because it's also something that you develop with some kind of practice.
Nice. Gosh, that's a beautiful description, Anya. Thank you so much. So going back to Kundalini, the energy of Kundalini, you know, mystics talk about the golden cord, the coiled serpent, and how it comes up the spinal column. Very much, it's the caduceus, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how it stimulates the pineal and pituitary gland. And a lot of people, you know, focus on this energy. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect of the yoga?
Yeah, so that's like ancient yogi were talking about
mm-hmm,
this
energy,
like a serpent based at the base of the spine, and then what we want to rise it up and up the spine and up to the higher glands, the pineal pituitary gland. And it's the truth is with that, through movements, through exercises, we working up our spine and that main canal or channel that the energy kind of flows, and bringing awareness to unbalancing all the parts of the body. And of course that we're aiming always for the higher glands, but not only, because we want all of the systems, lower triangle, upper triangle, all the energy centers, like what we call chakras, to be balanced, not only like one or another, not only aiming for, oh, let me have my pineal because it's like a crown, it's like the be ruling my whole body. We want mm-hmm. nice balance, and what we aiming with yoga practices. And sometimes, like now I'm working a lot more with the yoga therapy and able to cater the practice individually to people. Sometimes we'd be like, no, let's just don't go that high up. Let's just focus. Let's get a little bit more grounded. You know, it depends like where individual is. So we want to understand where we are and then kind of figure out the practice that, you know, where you need. Some people maybe need to work a little bit on their heart, but maybe it will be hard to access because they need to deal with their anger at the navel first. And then, so there's like very interesting kind of many way mandala of healing that you can start integrating through Kundalini yoga because it has so many tools.
Yes, wonderful. Great. And that could be so healing for so many people to be able to work through their system like that. That's great. Can you talk a little bit about the chakras and how you could guide someone to working through their chakras?
Well, it's again, going back to intention and awareness. Mm-hmm. That's the place to start with. Kind of evaluate the body. If you're not familiar with yoga, if you're not familiar with chakras or energy centers, just kind of like where you feel like maybe stuck a little bit, or there's just maybe even avoidance of the area, you know, of the body, like due to, because maybe there is some trauma or like some experiences that kind of we collect it and put in those places. Mm-hmm. And just have like awareness of that, or even like evaluating like your emotions, you know, if you like very fiery person or very airy, you know, and or you know, there's a lot of grief maybe happening, which will be incorporating like a water and tears and sadness. And then I'm not giving prescription, right, for the practices. And then so understanding chakras, that's kind of how we begin. We begin with, so this like the say first chakra, that sure. would be like a base of the spine. Like that's where what yogis, ancient yogis would say, the Kundalini located. And it's like our earth. It's kind of what closest to the ground, right? What gives us that sensation or experience of like stability and belonging and that. And if we feel like a little bit unsettled in that place, then maybe that would be like a first chakra. And then the second chakra, that's kind of, so that's the first is about like survival, like a first thing, like that's number one. We just need to make it. We just need to, you know, get food and a shelter and like, you know, just have that. And then we go to, then of course we survived and it's good. Now we're like, oh, but let me enjoy life. So that would be second chakra, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, what I like, what colors I like, what clothes I like, what how I look to, you know, all this like little flirtatious, you know, and then things like, so like you're enjoying life a little bit more. And then we go to third chakra, like the navel point, like the your fire element of the fire, and that could be either way your very powerful expressions or maybe very angry expressions, and it depends on if it's balanced or not. And then you're going to the heart, and the heart is a little bit like of higher and subtle elements, and it's a love and compassion. Like, can we able we are we generous enough to give that much? And, you know, or we need maybe healing a little bit in that place too. So we feel love by ourselves. And then we kind of going up higher to our throat, and the throat would be like expression of yourself, your true self. Through your heart, you're connecting with who you really are. You like feeling it, and then you can communicate that. Can you say it? Do you feel your words are important, or there's some blockage? Maybe your voice is very quiet, and you, or maybe sometimes no, people just feel like necessity, talk, but it doesn't connect with like the deep essence of who they are. And then going higher, we're going to about sixth chakra, which is like ancient yogi called the third eye, seeing unseen, when we not seeing with our eyes, but sensing. And another aspect of that is not only sensing, what we also call intuition, but also projecting. What are we putting out there? Because it's a two-way channel. Not only what you receive, but also what do you want to put out there? What kind of, you know, thought, yeah. idea, intention. And then we're going to this beloved seventh chakra, which is a crown and associated with pineal gland, that is the, now scientists talk about, this is the one, the main thing that regulates everything. Before it was not the case. And so now I understand, like, this is how everything begins, like, and all the regulations for all the glands and all the systems happen. And that would be related to our sleep as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really fun that the scientists are really diving into those areas of the brain and exploring them more. It's been fun to read the research around it all.
It's what Yogi was saying, like, well, we're just doing it now. Mm-hmm. In 500 years, they will know exactly how it works, you know, because there's just not technology to measure. We can measure certain things, but there is just not enough fine, subtle technologies to measure, like, everything that we do as yogis. And
and I think, you know, lacking faith. You know, of just what is, and, you know, just people searching, proof, instead of, you know, just relaxing and accepting, you know, what is, and going on, just faith.
Why I also like love yoga, because the proof would be, it's your own experience, and no one can take it away from you, and no one can convince you or not convince you. If you feel it, it's yours, and on that you can base a lot, you know, in your life, like what you change, what you do, what choices you make.
Yes. Yeah. That's great wisdom. We get that, push that on repeat. And let's see. We've spoke a little bit about chakras. Let's go into things that possibly stimulate the chakras, like the pranayamas and the mantras and that sort of thing, and kind of describe what those are.
Mm-hmm. So pretty much with, I would say I can take any yoga set and there will be stimulation for pretty much all of the energy center, but there will be, of course, point that we kind of focusing more, and like pranayama breathing exercise will co-regulate and co-stimulate all of the energy centers, especially if we go for like a long and deep breathing, when we engage our belly, when we really deep slow breathe and we consciously feeling experience the breath, that will pretty much work on all the organs and systems. The deep relaxation, when we often, if you see like some busy city yoga class, people roll their mats and leave before the deep relaxation, but that's when integration of all the experiences happen, that nice deep savasana, when you really let go, and your body has this chance, after whatever you gave your body, all these experiences, all this movement, all the breath, it has to actually take this moment to process that and co-regulate, because it's also time, because, you know, very often our life experiences take us out of that space when things are running smoothly and regulating itself. Then we have yoga practice, and then we lay down, and then the magic happens. Then when things actually start getting, our chakras being balanced, and, you know, our stress level reduces, and all the systems, all the flow of pranic energy, life force, what we call it, along all the meridians or nadis, as we call them in yoga, start kind of like blockages being removed. So that's a very important part.
Awesome. Can you talk a little bit more about the meridians and the nadis?
So yoga is dated back when like texts happened. People say like thousands of years ago. Some people say hundreds of years ago. Yogis say, they say it was about 26,000 years ago, because that when the like main shift happened in human consciousness and people start exploring their sensory system. And yogis, like unusual people who would go in the caves and wherever they would go, isolate themselves, because they were very interested into exploring how position of the hands changes something within them, how position of the body or movement changes something, how their drishti or their eye focus would influence things within themselves. So through that kind of yoga was developed, when people would start first exploring sensory through sensory explorations, and so, and they would pass it on like one to another, kind of like those knowledge, those experiences. Through that initial, what we call umbrella of yoga, was born three systems that we know of: Ayurveda, yoga, and Chinese medicine. Because they would understand how, and then Chinese medicine went to also Qigong and Tai Chi and all, you know, because it would also include like herbs and food and things like that. And so the meridians, there would be, also they would, you would hold the mudra, you would hold the position, and you would feel that how the energy moves. And then they would come up with like you know, maps. Oh, this is a large intestine. Oh, this is my spleen. Oh, this is my heart, even though it's not near the heart, but it's somewhere, but it affects this area very much. And you can also dissect any yoga pose and exercise when you do, just like when you do, and you feel like, where do I feel things flowing and how? Because some, there's also different ways of stimulating it. It could be pressure by holding the pose or like applying, or it could be, you know, it could be like dynamic pump up and down, and they will have like slightly different effect, whatever the person needs to, that effect to happen. Mm-hmm. And then so through that sensory system, the meridian system was discovered. And in Chinese medicine, we know it's been used for acupuncture, acupressure. You know, in yoga, we pretty much just applying exercises to that. We're not doing, sometimes it's also like a little bit of acupressure with certain things we like hold and, you know, some points or some areas, but it's mostly like through stimulating body. And yeah, so that's how.
Great. And a little bit about the mantras, maybe, and how those function and work in the system.
Yeah, mantras, the what we call them in a bigger umbrella, we called nad, or like sound. It has tremendous effects on the physical body. And sometimes with people, let's say, cannot practice yoga because maybe they're not well, or but they can still practice sound. And the sound has multiple effects. It's, let's say, when you pronouncing certain sounds, they will, with a tremendous amount of nerve ends on the roof of the mouth, in our face, because sometimes the jaw will be dropping for like some sounds on this, or like some pressure applied with, we will influence those nadis, those energy channels, the nerves as well, that will go up and directly stimulate the brain for certain action or activity, what we want to achieve with yoga. And that will start co-regulating other system because we go right to the higher glands. And ancient yogis also was practicing with sounds, how they, what they do and how they affect the body. When you position your jaw this way, you position your tongue this way, when your roof of the mouth, it has that kind of pressure with that kind of rhythm. And that would, then sound also has a rhythm to itself, which also helps to regulate our own internal rhythm, rhythm of the heart, rhythm of the breath. So there's multiple applications you can do with the sound. Sound is incredibly powerful.
That's great. So someone who is wheelchair bound or something like that can still practice aspects of Kundalini.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What's the difference between a yantra and a mantra?
Well, the mantras is designed to, some mantras adjust the sound, mm-hmm. and that will go for like that physical effect. Some mantras would be repetition of words that will also, that be, through the sound, will have that effect on the body, on the psyche, on the pattern of the thought, like repetitive. And some yantra would be a longer message to that. We don't use as much in Kundalini yoga, even though we do, mm-hmm. but in like a regular class setting, what you would expect is to have more like of like a mantra repetition, sometimes the sound, and sometimes it goes from, let's say, 3 minutes, you can go up to like, you know, 2 hours or something like that. But regular would be, let's say, 7 to 11 minutes in regular class,
right.
Which is also related to what people say, like, oh, why it's like that amount of time. But because yogis also were experiencing, like ancient yogis, like how the cycle of the brain pattern that needs to be sort of affected, how long does it take? And how long, how many repetition of, let's say, you need to affect that particular cycle so you can repattern. Because through the sound, we're repatterning our brain as well. We're repatterning our ways, what we usually go, how our kind of the trails that we developed, right? Like, uh-huh. Because through yoga, we want to change on a deeper level. But we talked about a little bit of the, to tap into the moment before the thought happened, when the thought has happened. And then through repetition and repetition and repetition of mantra, because the ancient sounds would have its own vibration, right? So we sometimes know translation like perfectly, sometimes like kind of like, oh, it's about this or it's about that, you know, or sometimes it's just the sound, like what feels good, you know, like there would be like the same meditation with sound hum, you know, it's so universal. Every culture has it, every somehow like we know it, you know, ourselves sometimes it's just humming. And why are we doing that? And then, oh, but because just recently there is actually like some chemicals being extra produced in the body, and they stimulate, they balance your heart, the cardiovascular system. So that already known. But what else it does, we don't know, you know, like specifically as like say like from the medical approach.
Right.
So that would be, sort of so many ways to, I'm sorry.
Cool. No, it's awesome. I love all the information that, you know, you're able to share with us. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love Kundalini Yoga is one of my favorites. It really incorporates a lot of the stuff. The mantras, you know, really is reflective of the Bhakti Yoga, and the meditation is really like the Raja Yoga, and then the Laya Yoga, you know, in certain parts too. What's your favorite part of Kundalini Yoga and, you know, all of the different traditions that it brings together?
Well, I kind of love it all. I came to Kundalini Yoga and to yoga in general because I love the physical exercises. Mm-hmm. I loved how they made me feel. I loved how, like, but then when I was young, I wasn't so much like, oh, meditation, okay, I guess we have to do it. like it wasn't really like a driver for me. It didn't really get it like right away. And then slowly with the practice, I'm like, oh, this is the thing. This is why we're doing that. So it's kind of like my own discovery, going through my own kind of life. Now I cannot even imagine like doing practice and not meditating. Or like not follow, like not going to like a super conscious breath, because I know like I'd rather not to move if I'm not going to breathe, you know, very consciously and, you know, using the techniques, because like it just, it's like you don't get the whole thing, all the experience with possible. And again, it comes from that, you know, you experience it once and then like you're constantly going for that, like, oh, I want to have that full experience.
Can you talk a little bit about that super consciousness? You know, because that's something I remember from Raja Yoga being, you know, really fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about that, you know, for our listeners?
Well, that's the awareness that you talk about, that through your experiences, when not only in the movement, in the moment when you do, okay, let's do this kind of movement and focus on that. Then we're adding the breath and focus on the breath alliance, right? And then maybe we're adding sound sometimes and like this, how it does. And so, and it all goes with particular rhythm. So you all full in this moment, even though there's kind of a lot of doing, you can say, but it's so conscious. And it, in some moments, like your other thoughts will start coming in, like say, oh, I need to do dishwasher, or I need to pick up my child or something. But then you when you're still in that moment, you're still doing that. It can be movement, it can be meditation. You kind of go back, oh, no, I need to remember breath. I need to remember sound. I need to remember movement or hand position. And that constantly happens, that kind of walking back and forth from conscious to not conscious, from conscious to from like what you, and then you realize who is telling me to go back to the practice when my other self, like my mind wants to jump into like do other things and analyze something, or, you know. And then so the more you do that, the more you connect with that consciousness, like that super consciousness, because you and then easily in the life situations when you're not in a yoga setting, when everything is safe and good and predictable, plus minus, right? You can access that just because you already know this path. You develop that path. So this is pretty much why we're doing yoga, not only on the physical level of benefits, but also so throughout the life, when we go and we experience life and life gives us so many surprises, we can tap into that place that will be, okay, let's see bigger thing. Let's evaluate not from the point of like fear, my negative mind, or, you know, things like that. Let me go into that neutrality, that place that knows it all.
Nice. Beautiful description, Anya. Thank you. And not only do you do the Kundalini yoga, but you do the yoga therapy. And I think that, you know, from what you just said, it's a great segue into your yoga therapy practice, because you've been, as you said, in a previous conversation, you know, working on that. Can you describe what that is and what you've learned and how you're going to bring that to the community?
Yeah, so yoga therapy is it's quite a new but very quickly emerging field in the medical establishment, because more people realizing how effective it can be, not only for healthy people to prevent diseases or health issues, but it, or let's say help with like minor, let's say like a little stress, a little this, a little that, or can, how beneficial it can be for people who already have a condition, sometimes very serious condition, and how these people can get well using yoga therapy, and not only get well, but also stay well. So the changes will happen on such deeper levels that it will shift a lot of things. So they will start kind of living almost life a little bit differently in a way, but it's also a natural way how yoga works. It could be, let's say, question was like how I started it and how I came to yoga therapy.
Sure, let's do it.
So I've been looking into this program because like I saw how much people gain, how many benefits from just practicing yoga and then already working a little bit, like some people, oh, I have this problem, I have that problem, and kind of helping them a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then understanding that, oh, you can go deeper, you can do so much more, but I just didn't know really how to apply these tools. And then so I looked at this program and I actually went to a class of yoga therapeutic class and, oh my gosh, this is what I do. But I just didn't really know how to, you know, because this is the whole program, how they put pieces together and like brought together all of the so many tools you can use. And so I've been looking at this program for like a few years and I thought, I can't really do it because my life is just too complicated and this and that. But finally I made the decision, no, this feels really right to me. And so I started taking this program, but it's like a 3-year commitment. So, and I'm in the middle of it, but I'm already started seeing people. And I tell you, sometimes the people like think they suffer for years would be one session and it's gone.
Wow. Could you give a couple examples maybe?
Yeah. So
we have an idea of like what happens in session.
Yeah. So first you kind of find out what brought the person there. What are their main concerns? And then you, as a yoga therapist, you evaluate not only what people saying that, but it's also like the body language and like things like that. So you kind of like sensing a lot more because you go into that neutral space, which is very good to have 20 years practice to doing that because it's not the easy thing to do. And like if you just go, let me be neutral. And then so you kind of figuring out, and then you find the entry point. Whatever person is, the entry point to this healing mandala, it could be through breath, it could be through movement, it could be through working on beliefs, like not healthy beliefs that cause sort of, in not necessarily cause, but let the person sort of build their life around that belief and then mm-hmm. compensate instead of, you know, living healthy life. So there is like so many levels, first of all, levels, but also like entry points you can do. It can be with mantra, it can be with exercise. And then the person will be practicing that, what you kind of find out. And it doesn't have to be some dramatic change. It could be something minor, but it will make a huge difference for this person. Not to overwhelm, mm-hmm. but, you know, that it, and yeah, that was cases like that. The person was suffering with like panic attacks. And for years, and he wouldn't do anything in life, and high blood pressure and things like that. Mm-hmm. We did one session, they were gone.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was just kind of like applying what this ancient technology is to that particular individual, where he was. And again, that the condition, there is no, like, let's say, formula. With yoga therapy, we don't work with formula. We work with individual person because mm-hmm. his story will be very different from another piece of story. So his panic attacks will be very different from another person and it will be different approach.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. Do you have any other examples of other conditions that people may come to you for yoga therapy? Because it sounds, it's not just physical, it's spiritual and emotional and
absolutely,
you know, psychological.
Yeah, so absolutely. There is, anything pretty much is where you can work out pretty much anything.
Okay, cool.
I don't think there is anything you cannot, you know, even right. though some people, I haven't had those experiences in my life working, but, you know, studying that, even helping people to transition, even there. That would be place for yoga therapy wow. and help to be a healing place. Could be for, you know, the person, family or close people to be like an experience that will be beautiful and will be, you know, conscious and not full of fear and things like that. So yeah. there is never a point in life when you cannot apply those teachings and, you know, benefit from them.
That's wonderful. I'm excited for you that you're starting that practice.
Cool.
And you also teach on Vashon, because so maybe share, we have 10 minutes left of the show, maybe mm-hmm. share like where you practice, how people can reach you and mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I teach right now just a regular classes twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9:30, and it's at my place, at my house. I just, because I just came back, I haven't really figure out, branch out and see what else I can teach. Mm-hmm. And then winter, it's in my house. On the summer, as soon as it gets warmer, I have a yoga platform in the woods, and that's quite a special experience to practice yoga on this, surrounded by trees and so much like air and a bird singing.
Beautiful.
And yeah, and then I'm open for like also individual sessions for yoga therapy specifically, and I can be reached at my email.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Anya V Weil, W-E-I-L at gmail.com. And maybe we can post it later.
Nice. Yeah, I'll post that.
Yeah.
For sure. And also maybe spell it just one more time.
A-N-Y-A-V-W-E-I-L at gmail.com.
Great. That way people had a chance to jot it down. Perfect. Going back to Kundalini yoga and what it is, the three pillars are taught: discipline, spiritual study, and devotion to God. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Well, discipline, it's how kind of things begin when you start applying the practice. It takes that, you know, just like wake up in the morning and do that practice, do that exercise, hold that pose, continue this. So slowly you're building up capacity for your discipline through that. You kind of also experiencing greater self-respect that you can do it, that you did it, that how like you own that experience, and not because somebody told you, but it's, which is not only discipline like in general, but it's more like a self-discipline. So you experience that your greater capacity from that discipline. Like when you have that greater capacity, you are able to experience your greater self. And it's not about you anymore only, because you already conquered the biggest. The biggest thing to conquer in your life is your own self. It's your own, you know, so through that self-discipline, we kind of going there. And when we are there, we already at ability to help others, to sacrifice, to be more compassionate people, just because we already kind of greater than we thought we would be. Like we would be able to do more than we thought we would be. And when we talk about peace of devotion to God, it's also through Kundalini Yoga, it's again through the experience. You experience that light, you experience that divinity within you, and that's what you bow to. That's what you merging with when you practice yoga on that level. Then you really fully embracing that. And then as soon as you're experiencing that, so that's what we call like devotion, right, to that. Yeah. Then your whole life will be devoted to that in the way of like, I want to experience that, and I will make sure that other people in my life or around it will be also have that. So I'm not, you know, you just live more kind of brighter, lighter life to bring, sharing that light with people.
Nice. So. Wonderful. And it really does bring you really within yourself and to be able to project that light out to other people.
Yeah.
Know, by doing that practice.
Yeah.
And another part you mentioned earlier in the conversation was kriyas. Can you describe what those are and how they function in the Kundalini yoga practice?
Well, kriyas, it's a set of exercises, or it could be even one exercise itself as a kriya. And they are a design or put together or in order to achieve particular result. So that could be a nabi kriya, that stimulation for your digestion and your navel point in that area, or heart opener. Or so this is just kind of, sometimes you practice only one exercise, and that kriya in itself, you don't need to do anything else. You just do that, and it will have those benefits on the what you're working on. And there are many, many kriyas to choose from in Kundalini. I don't think I practice them all. I don't think it's like there's like thousands of them. And that's why I feel this also, like, this is the yoga for people who want like diversity in their life. They want like interesting things, like constantly different, like try and this and that. That's kind of good for that too.
So you can get really specific with these kriyas.
You can get really specific with kriyas and yeah.
Okay. And how does Dharma play a role in Kundalini yoga? And can you, you know, describe that and what it is?
Well, through practices and through that consciousness, we work on what in yogic, the karma. The karma, it's pretty much like a history in a way, like our accumulation of baggage in some form or another. And there are practices that we do that do help to clear the karma, let's say, what kind of like the history, and come to our dharma, which is almost like your destiny, your highest potential, your light, that's where you kind of meant to be. So living dharmic life would be kind of living very authentically for your true self from that light within you, and on the long way, not creating too much karma. So because that would allow that path, sort of. But it's like you dedicated to, like, I want to leave from that place. And that place exists, you know, through that experience of yoga. And then you spread it throughout your life. It's not just on the yoga mat. It's everywhere.
Cool. If there's one thing you would like to share with people about your Kundalini practice and what it can do for them, what would that be?
That is self-discovery. That's what it is. It's kind of, it's very fascinating and amazing path to do, to work on, because that's what it allows the most. It's getting to know yourself, understanding yourself, and growing from that place. And for me, Kundalini yoga was that path to really help me to tap into that and being on that path. Yeah, so I'm very, very grateful for this technology. And
that's awesome. And I'm grateful for you. I've taken, you know, a couple of your Kundalini classes, and I love them every single time. It's really a beautiful experience, even when I have to suffer through fire breathing. It's a beautiful experience, especially after, when we take that pause and we just sit with it, and you can really feel, you know, what that has done for you and your physical body and mentally and spiritually as well, and how it's settling and kind of grounding you. And it really does set a great tone, you know, for the rest of the day. Is there a little practice that you would recommend for people to be able to start? Just a like little 2 or 3 minute thing that you would recommend for people to be able to start their day? You know, and of course, you know, contacting you and taking one of your classes.
Yeah, absolutely. You can just, if you're not familiar with yoga, or it's even maybe it's not in your thing, you know, it doesn't have to be like limiting or anything. Mm-hmm. You can just start with your conscious breathing. I would always start there. You just sit, or, you know, you go on the walk in the woods, and you just start consciously breathing in and out, and maybe counting your breath, or maybe praying with your breath, like taking breath in, and let's say I'm taking that light, and you know, and then breathing out, I'm releasing the thoughts that not serving me. And then another breath, and you think of something else. Maybe you know, I'm opening my heart and connecting with my heart, and exhale, I'm releasing what is no longer needed in my life. And just do like maybe 10 breaths a day. Just start with that, and then see how you feel after that. Just take a pause afterwards. Absolutely, even if it's seems like a breathing, it's not much, but even that pause will help you to integrate it and become like a full experience for your body.
Thank you so much, Anya. Oh, this has been such a treat to have you. I love this conversation.
Thank
and
you.
I love everything that you brought to the conversation and all the information you brought to our listeners here on Bash On. Everybody, Andra Weil, look her up. Her email address again is anyarweil@gmail.com. That's ANYAVWEIL@gmail.com, and take one of her classes. It's incredible. Thank you, Anya,
thank
again
you
for
so much
being with me. And thanks, everybody, for joining me today. Have a great day and remember to get out there and raise the vibe. I'm going to end our talk today with Longtime Sun, which Anya plays on her ukulele at the end of class all the time, which I just adore. Have a great day, everybody.
May the long time sun shine upon